Discourse 4. The Justice of God and the Damnation of Sinners. Romans 3:19. That every mouth may be stopped. The main subject of the doctrinal part of this epistle is the free grace of God in the salvation of men by Jesus Christ, especially as it appears in the doctrine of justification by faith alone. And the more clearly to evince this doctrine and show the reason of it, the Apostle, in the first place, establishes that point that no flesh living can be justified by the deeds of the law. And to prove it, he is very large and particular in showing that all mankind, not only the Gentiles, but Jews, are under sin, and so under the condemnation of the law, which is what he insists upon from the beginning of the epistle to this place. He first begins with the Gentiles, and in the first chapter shows that they are under sin, by setting forth the exceeding corruptions and horrid wickedness that overspread the Gentile world, and then through the second chapter, and the former part of this third chapter, to the text and following verse, he shows the same of the Jews, that they also are in the same circumstances with the Gentiles in this regard. They had a high thought of themselves, because they were God's covenant people, and circumcised, and the children of Abraham. They despised the Gentiles as polluted, condemned, and accursed, but looked on themselves, on account of their external privileges, and ceremonial and moral righteousness, as a pure and holy people, and the children of God. As the Apostle observes in the second chapter, it was therefore strange doctrine to them, that they also were unclean and guilty in God's sight, and under the condemnation and curse of the law. The Apostle therefore, on account of their strong prejudices against such doctrine, the more particularly insists upon it, and shows that they are no better than the Gentiles. As in the ninth verse of this chapter, what then? Are we better than they? No, in no wise. For we have before proved both Jews and Gentiles, that they are all under sin. And, to convince them of it, he produces certain passages out of their own law, or the Old Testament, to whose authority they pretended a great regard, from the ninth verse to our text. And it may be observed, that the Apostle, first, cites certain passages to prove that all mankind are corrupt, verse 10-12. As it is written, there is none righteous, no, not one, there is none that understandeth, there is none that seeketh after God, they are all gone out of the way, they are together become unprofitable, there is none that doeth good, no, not one. Secondly, the passages he cites next are to prove that not only are all corrupt, but each one wholly corrupt, as it were all over unclean, from the crown of the head to the soles of his feet. And therefore several particular parts of the body are mentioned, the throat, the tongue, the lips, the mouth, the feet, verse 13-15. Their throat is an open sepulcher. With their tongues they have used deceit. The poison of asps is under their lips, whose mouth is full of cursing and bitterness, their feet are swift to shed blood. And, thirdly, he quotes other passages to show that each one is not only all over corrupt, but corrupt to a desperate degree, verse 16-18, by affirming the most pernicious tendency of their wickedness. Destruction and misery are in their ways. And then by denying all goodness or godliness in them. And the way of peace have they not known, there is no fear of God before their eyes. And then, lest the Jews should think these passages of their law do not concern them, and that only the Gentiles are intended in them, the Apostle shows in the text, not only that they are not exempt, but that they especially must be understood, Romans 3:19. Now we know that whatsoever things the law saith, it saith to them who are under the law. By those that are under the law are meant the Jews, and the Gentiles by those that are without law, as appears by the 12th verse of the preceding chapter. There is special reason to understand the law, as speaking to and of them, to whom it was immediately given. And therefore the Jews would be unreasonable in exempting themselves. And if we examine the places of the Old Testament whence these passages are taken, we shall see plainly that special respect is had to the wickedness of the people of that nation, in every one of them. So that the law shuts all up in universal and desperate wickedness, that every mouth may be stopped. The mouths of the Jews, as well as of the Gentiles, notwithstanding all those privileges by which they were distinguished from the Gentiles. The things that the law says are sufficient to stop the mouths of all mankind, in two respects. 1. To stop them from boasting of their righteousness, as the Jews were wont to do. As the apostle observes in the 23d verse of the preceding chapter, that the apostle has respect to stopping their mouths in this respect, appears by the 27th verse of the context, where is boasting then? It is excluded. The law stops our mouths from making any plea for life, or the favor of God, or any positive good, from our own righteousness. 2. To stop them from making any excuse for ourselves, or objection against the execution of the sentence of the law, or the infliction of the punishment that it threatens. That this is intended, appears by the words immediately following, Romans 2:19. That all the world may become guilty before God. That is, that they may appear to be guilty, and stand convicted before God, and justly liable to the condemnation of his law, as guilty of death, according to the Jewish way of speaking. And thus the apostle proves, that no flesh can be justified in God's sight by the deeds of the law, as he draws the conclusion in the following verse. And so prepares the way for establishing the great doctrine of justification by faith alone, which he proceeds to do in the following part of the chapter, and of the epistle. Doctrine. It is just with God eternally to cast off and destroy sinners. For this is the punishment which the law condemns to. The truth of this doctrine may appear by the joint consideration of two things, namely, man's sinfulness, and God's sovereignty. One, it appears from the consideration of man's sinfulness, and that whether we consider the infinitely evil nature of all sin, or how much sin men are guilty of. 1. If we consider the infinite evil and heinousness of sin in general, it is not unjust in God to inflict what punishment is deserved. Because the very notion of deserving any punishment is, that it may be justly inflicted. A deserved punishment and a just punishment are the same thing. To say that one deserves such a punishment, and yet to say that he does not justly deserve it, is a contradiction. And if he justly deserves it, then it may be justly inflicted. Every crime or fault deserves a greater or less punishment, in proportion as the crime itself is greater or less. If any fault deserves punishment, then so much the greater the fault, so much the greater is the punishment deserved. The faulty nature of anything is the formal ground and reason of its desert of punishment. And therefore the more anything hath of this nature, the more punishment it deserves. And therefore the terribleness of the degree of punishment, let it be never so terrible, is no argument against the justice of it, if the proportion does but hold between the heinousness of the crime and the dreadfulness of the punishment. So that if there be any such thing as a fault infinitely heinous, it will follow that it is just to inflict a punishment for it that is infinitely dreadful. A crime is more or less heinous, according as we are under greater or less obligations to the contrary. This is self-evident, because it is herein that the criminalness or faultiness of anything consists, that it is contrary to what we are obliged or bound to, or what ought to be in us. So the faultiness of one being hating another, is in proportion to his obligation to love him. The crime of one being despising and casting contempt on another, is proportionably more or less heinous, as he was under greater or less obligations to honor him. The fault of disobeying another, is greater or less, as anyone is under greater or less obligations to obey him. And therefore if there be any being that we are under infinite obligations to love, and honor, and obey, the contrary towards him must be infinitely faulty. Our obligation to love, honor, and obey any being, is in proportion to his loveliness, honorableness, and authority. For that is the very meaning of the words. When we say anyone is very lovely, it is the same as to say, that he is one very much to be loved. Or if we say such a one is more honorable than another, the meaning of the words is, that he is one that we are more obliged to honor. If we say anyone has great authority over us, it is the same as to say, that he has great right to our subjection and obedience. But God is a being infinitely lovely, because he hath infinite excellency and beauty. To have infinite excellency and beauty, is the same thing as to have infinite loveliness. He is a being of infinite greatness, majesty, and glory. And therefore he is infinitely honorable. He is infinitely exalted above the greatest potentates of the earth, and highest angels in heaven. And therefore he is infinitely more honorable than they, His authority over us is infinite. And the ground of his right to our obedience is infinitely strong. For he is infinitely worthy to be obeyed himself, and we have an absolute, universal, and infinite dependence upon him, so that sin against God, being a violation of infinite obligations, must be a crime infinitely heinous, and so deserving infinite punishment. Nothing is more agreeable to the common sense of mankind than that sins committed against anyone must be proportionably heinous to the dignity of the being offended and abused. As it is also agreeable to the word of God, 1 Samuel 2:25. If one man sin against another, the judge shall judge him. That is, shall judge him, and inflict a finite punishment, such as finite judges can inflict. But if a man sin against the Lord, who shall entreat for him? This was the aggravation of sin that made Joseph afraid of it, Genesis 39:9. How shall I commit this great wickedness, and sin against God? This was the aggravation of David's sin, in comparison of which he esteemed all others as nothing, because they were infinitely exceeded by it. Psalm 51:4. Against thee only have I sinned,